Here's Higdon. It sits up nicely for Michael Higdon. And what a start for Motherwell. But here's Malt, and he goes for it for Son. Magnificent Malt. Stephen Robinson celebrates. Motherwell, 2-1. Could that be the goal that puts him into the Betfred Cup final?
He's got Irwin. The supporting links from Ainsworth on the angle. Lionel Ainsworth fires home.
It's Lasley deep into stoppage time. Up goes Sutton. No foul given. Kerr. And Reid is there to knock it in. The goal is given. Hesitation for Craig Reid, who scores his first ever goal in senior football. And what a moment for Motherwell.
Hello, welcome to the MFC podcast. Tonight, myself and Pepe will look back in games against Hibs and Celtic. We'll look ahead to Saturday's game against St Johnstone. We'll discuss incomings at Firth Park, potential departures as well. And we'll see what else takes a fancy over the next three quarters of an hour or so. How you going, mate?
All good. It's all good, Andy.
Good to hear it. Well, we'll start with the most recent game. It was a trip to Celtic Park. Always a difficult one against Celtic. This one was no different. Although it was a spirited performance, we certainly had a few chances in the first half. Callum Slattery striking the bar. It was a great save from Joe Hart, from Sean Goss. The rebound falls as well, and you think that Tony Watt might be on hand to put it in, but the referee blows his whistle for what I assume was a foul. It might have been an offside. A penalty claim turned down as well for Tony Watt. Pepe, it was a good showing in the first half. We lose a goal through a softly awarded free kick. We've got about 2 minutes to prepare ourselves to defend it. Unfortunately, we just don't do that. The ball comes to Tom Rogic. He's in acres of space. And a player of that quality, more often than not, is going to punish you. That's exactly what he did. Into the second half, a few chances for Celtic at the start of the second half. But then there wasn't much in the game. I think that the Celtic were much better in the second half. They controlled the game much more. But we kind of came away somewhat frustrated, I think, that we didn't get a share of the spoils.
If you don't take your chances, though, you don't win the game. And we didn't take our chances. We had, I don't remember us having as many chances at Celtic Park. And I really did think they were there for the taking. And I think, to be fair, Graham Alexander, I think he's seen that as well. And listening to the, I didn't go to the game just due to the pricing structure, which we discussed last time. But listening to Celtic TV, they were even commenting on how well we were attacking. And between them moaning about every single decision that they claimed went our way. Whereas it's amazing how I thought the exact opposite. The game itself, we could have easily have been one or two up. It was a spell, probably a good half an hour in the first half, where I felt as if, do you know what, we're going to get something out of this game. And it's always, you just see when that free kick was given, I had a feeling that they were going to score for it. Now, whether it's just my negative mindset when it comes to things like that, but you just had a gut feeling that something's going to happen. I suppose when you look at it, our back four was kind of a changed. Obviously, we had Jake Carroll playing at centre-half, but it wasn't that long ago, a few weeks ago, that we were discussing how the vast amount of centre-halves that we seem to have. Obviously, Ricky Lamy been out, Solomon Sondre, Oyala, as we said, Ricky Lamy. I don't really know what the script is with Darragh O'Connor. I'd kind of half thought he was coming back in. I've kind of stopped listening to Graham Alexander's press conferences because he just doesn't really tell you anything in them, so I've kind of lost interest with him. And your only real recognised centre-half was Mugabe. Now, when you look at the starting lineup, it does come into your mind and you think, oh shit, we're going to be really up against it here. But then when you look at the Celtic team, they've not got a recognised striker. But the game kind of it managed itself out in relation to the they didn't have anybody that was with pace running in behind their back four and stuff, so it kind of worked well. Thought Stephen O'Donnell had a really good game. One of the things though that's starting to frustrate me going forward, and I'm maybe getting slightly off topic of the game, because the game's done and dusted now. We put up a decent fight, we didn't get there, but what's really starting to frustrate me is the stupid bookings. We see the stats every week that we're top of the booking chart, and to be honest with you, a lot of them we can't complain. You can almost go and put your coupon on for Callum Slattery and Kevin Van Veen to be booked in the first half, and I think that has a real negative effect. Now, Slattery's maybe a wee bit more debatable this time, but Van Veen, both against Hibs and Celtic, two more bookings, closer to the suspension. His bookings were ridiculous. I can't remember a game where he's not been booked, and that must have a negative effect. It must influence the substitutions. Slattery, I don't know how he's not been suspended, because I can't remember many games where he's not been booked. And it's something that, yes, it's good to be physical, strong, but I really do think it has a negative effect on our game, because he isn't getting in fully committed after he's on that booking. And I'm not saying that the two bookings were the result of why we get beat, but I think it has a negative aspect to our game in games going forward. And if you look back to the Hibs game as well, both of them, I think, were booked. I'm not 100% sure about Slattery, but certainly Van Veen with that stupid booking. So I think it's something in our game that we need to look at and eradicate.
I would tend to agree with that. In terms of Van Veen, he's already been suspended this season, and to go and get a yellow card in the manner that he did the other day, it's baffling. And you've got to think about the effect that that's had on his form as well, because he scores a double at Pittodrie that wins us the game, ends a run of poor results for us, and you're thinking, right, that's him. He's on form. This is a great time for him to push on and be a regular in the score sheet. He then misses the Hearts game as a consequence of picking up, I think it was 6 yellow cards. I'm sure I'm right in saying that, but I'll double check as we go along. So he misses the Hearts game. He's not scored since. And I'm not saying that he would have went on to score a brace in every game following that Aberdeen game, but it just kills some of his momentum. And he must feel the same as well, because from being top pick as a striker, you then fall down the pecking order. Conor Shields overtook him for a stage. He wasn't able to score against Dundee, then going into the game at Hibs. I think he had a contribution, but he certainly wasn't the live wire that we saw prior to suspension. So I think that has affected his game as well. So you need to kind of consider the effect both on the squad and on the individual as well. In terms of Dara Connor, you mentioned him right back at the start of your point. I was checking through his Twitter page because I was sure that this was the case, but he posted on the 30th of November a picture that he'd be back stronger than ever, but he was on crutches at the time, so I assume that was the night of the United game at Fir Park, so I assume that he's out for a longer period of time, given that he was on crutches. So that's maybe the reason why he didn't come back into the... Well, that's definitely the reason, if he's injured, that he wouldn't have come back into the back line against Celtic. You go back to that conversation that we had a couple of weeks ago, where we discussed the options that we had at centre-back, and there was various combinations that would work for us. Then you fast-forward, 3 or 4 weeks, and suddenly you've only got Bevis McGabby, who wasn't playing at centre-back in previous weeks, suddenly our only choice there. It's almost a feeling that we cursed it by discussing it, but I think one thing I would take from the Celtic game, though, and I don't know if you agree with this, but I thought defensively we looked fairly assured. I know David Turnbull was playing as their front man, and they didn't have the same threats as they would possess with the likes of Jota and Kyogo in their team, but you can only play what you come up against, and considering the circumstances, I thought they did quite well.
I think that's what I meant when I said it kind of balanced out I would have been had real fear if the likes of Jota, Kyogo, I wouldn't have been bothered if Ayete was playing. I even when I seen the team, I was really surprised to see that James Forrest was playing. And if he was fully fit, I thought he'll absolutely tear our back four apart. Although he's not really kicked on in the last kind of 6 months or whatever, but I'm not here to talk about him. But yeah, I didn't really feel too threatened. Just the timing of the free kick, I thought this is the time where they'll go ahead and can score, and they did. But there wasn't much in the game. It was a really kind of poor game. But again, going back to what you say, you look at that game and you write it off at the start of the season, as you would have done against Tibbs, and we got a point. We had our chances, we just didn't take them. And another day, we would have. There's been times this season where we've had half chances in taking them. It's just unfortunate that when you go to Celtic Park, you just don't get the luck that we've had elsewhere. But listen, the game hasn't affected confidence. If anything, it's maybe thought, well, do you know what, we've held our own against a team that's far bigger budgets. We could easily have went there, like we have in the past, and get absolutely hammered. Heads are down, i.e. what we did against Rangers, although we've come back fighting fit. But it would have been real negative thoughts. The fans would have been starting to think again, asking questions about the manager. But we've held our own. And for that, you're never happy when you get beat. But listen, it could have been better. It could have been worse. We'll just accept it and move on, I suppose.
Yeah, I posted up on the Twitter, but I do think that the trips to Celtic Park and Ibrox are a bit of a damage limitation exercise. And although Celtic had a lot of players out on Sunday, they've still got a lot of quality to come in. And you mentioned Ayete. He's the type of player that scores a hat trick against us and never scores against anybody else. So I was quite pleased to see Ayete out as well, to be perfectly honest with you. We'll go back and look at the Hibs game, a game that we both made nearly a week and a half ago now. A 1-1 draw. Hibs went ahead midway through the first half through Kevin Nisbet. It's pretty much against the run of play. We were creating a lot of chances. We had a lot of the ball. As the game went on, it looked like it would maybe be one of those afternoons where we just couldn't drag ourselves back in. But on the hour mark, Tony Watt comes up with yet another goal, a goal that brought him to the top of the Premiership scoring charts. Again, Pepe, we talk about difficult places to go. Easter Road certainly comes under that category. To go a goal down, but respond in that manner was very, very pleasing. And I think we left the capital with a pretty positive feeling about ourselves, because we've shown in recent times that if we go a goal behind, we can be a wee bit fragile. We can concede shortly again afterwards, and then you're in real trouble. But instead, the players didn't feel sorry for themselves after going behind, maybe against the run of play, and instead they knuckled down and got a crucial point against a team that it looks like will be in and about as it come the end of the season.
Certainly in the first half, when they scored, I was gutted, because I couldn't believe that we hadn't taken some of the chances. I was quite critical. I was really disappointed with Dean Cornelius running through, and I thought the chance looked far easier until I seen it on Sports Scene, and I thought, you know what, he's actually done his best as he could. He was another kind of positive aspect to the performance. The goal, Hibs described it as a great delivery and a great finish. I've been quite turned around my opinion of McGabby, but I was really disappointed with him. The way that he let Nisbet kind of drift past him. And before you know it, the ball's in the back of the net. The chances that we had, you would have... I couldn't believe... The amount of chances that we created over the last few weeks, and we just don't seem to be finding that cutting edge. And then Tony Watt comes up with with a great goal. Almost felt like it went in slow motion for me. But it was a great point. One of the grounds that I've been to quite often and come away with very little throughout my time supporting Motherwell. I always remember back to December when Tommy Coyne and Milo Dragovic scored a great goal. There's only maybe been about 4 or 5 times where we've went there and put in a really good performance. And I came away for that game thinking we could have got the 3 points. But at the same time, at that spell, they had a 5 kind of 10 minute spell where they had a few chances on the underside of the bar. So coming away with a point, I was delighted and actually really enjoyed it. It was a good away day. Getting up on the train and arriving in Edinburgh in the snow and walking back with quite a few Motherwell fans. It was a good away day, and I thoroughly enjoyed it. Obviously, the result was, I would have taken that before the game, so you can't come away too disappointed to be getting I don't mean it's a bonus point, but it was one of the games that I would have probably penciled in for us to get beat. I walked into when I got off the train, met a Hibs fan just chatting away, and he was saying he fully expected us to get hammered. He thought they'd beat us 2 or 3 nothing, and I said, no, I don't think it'll be like that at all. And I also thought, for the price that we discussed again, I thought Motherwell took quite a solid support through, which was encouraging. I thought the fans, the Motherwell fans were in great voice from start to finish, and I thought they had a great atmosphere in the stadium. So I have to say, hats off to them for that.
Yeah, it certainly created a great noise, and I think the players responded to it as well. It was a really kind of, I used the word spirited to describe the Celtic showing, but it was just hard working. There was plenty of what you want to see from a Motherwell team, plenty of endeavour, plenty of drive to get back into the game, and they got what they actually deserved in the end by getting a point. Just looking at the lineup for that game, Dean Cornelius comes in, and we talk about Graham Alexander throwing in a curveball at times. This was one of them, young guy getting thrown in for his Premiership start. And I thought he handled the occasion really well. He didn't look like a fish out of water by any extent. He did have that chance where he goes through. And yes, I think he should have had his first goal for the club as well. But overall, it's a great story. A young guy that's come through the youth academy, he's a Motherwell supporter, he spent plenty of time in amongst it in the stands, and now he's getting to live out his dream by playing for the club that he loves. It's one of these ones that you'd imagine the fans will be so behind Dean Cornelius to become a success at Fir Park.
Certainly, any young player that comes through, I think they always get that wee bit extra mileage with the support for maybe mistakes and stuff like that. But when they've been season ticket holders, and you can see when I watched his interview, you can see how much he loves the club. That just gives him, he's obviously going to need to perform on the pitch, but the fans are ready behind him. So surely that, or hopefully that will increase his confidence. He didn't look out of place at all. I was really happy with him. I don't think he was outstanding, but that's never going to be his game. I'd have loved for him to score that goal, because I'd love to have seen his celebration. I think he'd have went absolutely mental. So it looks as if he's maybe going to be the next one. I've been saying that there doesn't seem to be the next kind of player that's going to come through, just due to the lack of kind of a under-20s football due to COVID and stuff. But hopefully he's going to be the one. The other thing as well that when you're mentioning the lineup, I completely forgot all about Robbie Crawford, and then him and Liam Donnelly appeared at the Doldrums. Do you know what I mean? So it shows you that it could have been easy for Graham Alexander to shove Liam Donnelly in there. Obviously, we're not seeing him in training, but shoving Cornelius in, obviously worked really well. I was actually quite surprised that Cornelius didn't start against Celtic. You can understand why the occasion, match experience, of Barry Maguire. I think Maguire had played pretty well in the, until he'd been sent off in his previous game. But listen, I hope Dean Cornelius builds on that performance and starts to become a regular in the team, because it is great. We just need to look at recently, Alan Campbell, David Turnbull, you know what I mean? Guys like that. We've got players like Keith Lasley, but this boy has been in our position. And for me, that gives him that wee bit of extra kind of a... Obviously, Turnbull was a Motherwell supporter as well. But this boy, he's got family that are fans and stuff like that. It's a great story if it comes to be that he's a first-team regular.
Yeah, it certainly will be. And I guess that when we talk about young players progressing through, there's been a few question marks as to why Dean Cornelius wasn't loaned out at the start of the season. He featured in some of the Premier Sports Cup games and then just faded into the background, a few appearances on the bench, but never got that chance to show his worth. And as you say there, I think he was very unfortunate to have missed out against Celtic and what would have been another really big occasion for him and another chance to show what he can do. But it shows that Graham Alexander's got a lot of faith in the number 12 to number 20 positions almost, where he'll continue to consider them for selection. And he believes that should there be any injuries or should the squad need rotated, these guys have got enough quality to come in and do a good job.
I think, to be fair, at the start of the season, I'm pretty sure that he got a knee injury. I think he maybe got injured against Airdrie, if I'm not mistaken. And I think he was out for a fair bit and had to then fell down the pecking order. I don't know how long he was out, but I remember him having a knee injury. But I think if you look back to when the manager came in, he wanted to run with a bigger squad this year, because I think we expected COVID to hit home pretty much on a weekly basis. And until now, it hasn't really been like that. It's really just been that we've recently been affected by injuries, but obviously with the new variant and stuff like that I'm not really about to get into, so I'm sick of hearing it. It appears that this is what he's wanting, this kind of this squad. Because it is quite a big squad when you can afford to have a player like, I'm not saying Liam Donnelly's the be-all and end-all, but a kind of Northern Ireland international player who isn't included in the squad. But listen, I would probably prefer him to go out and loan. I always look back to Chris Cadden. I think he really came to fruition when he went to Albion Rovers and come back and really kicked on. I think it really does help them. If you look at the opposite side of the coin and you look at Dominic Thomas, who was the next big thing meant to be coming through and always looked exciting. And he never got loaned out, and we always went back and said, oh, in hindsight, we should have probably loaned him at the particular time. But we're in a different situation at the moment with COVID, and hopefully now he gets that he's made his first start and the manager knows that he can now rely on him. So hopefully he does continue to strive and make an appearance. But I do really miss, I loved it when you used to be able to watch the highlights of the under-20s. And obviously at the time, I mean, you go back to the Scottish Cup final with the likes of Hasty, Turnbull, Campbell, even the kind of Leach brothers and stuff. You know what I mean? It was great. And you really felt as if that was as close to reserve football as you could get. It was probably a bit more exciting that you had this real, real exciting group of boys coming through, but it is something that seems to be completely missing for professional football now, that obviously Rangers and Celtic have got their cult teams in the Lowland League. But for us, I mean, I would struggle to name more than five players that you'd class under 20s. The only reason that you do know them is because there's a few of them out in loan, which I don't know when it'll change back to the way it was, or if it ever will.
Yeah, a couple of moving factors in that one, I guess, with the ongoing pandemic and just, I think, facilities and also the fact that I think that if it was for the case that we weren't dealing with outside factors like COVID, then you would possibly have the likes of Dean Cornelius out on loan elsewhere. But because the situation as it is, I think that, as you rightfully mentioned, that you're going to need to make use of these guys at times, because there will be isolation periods, there will be players that catch a virus and then have to sit out a period of time, and there's an extended recovery time and such like. So yeah, there's going to be opportunities, and I think that on his first start in the Premiership, Dean Cornelius really made a claim to challenge four places. Another player that returned on Sunday was Liam Donnelly, who you've said has been completely out of the picture. It's been a long time without football for Liam Donnelly, but then comes back into the team from the bench against Celtic. That was his first appearance since the Rangers game, I believe, at Ibrox. So a long layoff, and it's been a really frustrating couple of years for Donnelly, hasn't it? Really not been able to get back to that level that he had shown before his injury, where I think during the 1920 season he was possibly one of our key men.
It was. He scored a barrel of the goals that season, albeit some of them, I would say maybe half of them were penalties. And saying that, the seasons before that, when he was playing a more defensive role, kind of a right back and even coming in at centre half, I was never ever really sure of him. Steve Robinson at the time really rated him and really pushed him, and then moved him into the, kind of him and Maguire seemed to move into a similar position at similar times. And I do think he's a player of kind of experience now. He's played at an international level. And if he can get fit, he's definitely going to be a useful addition to have. And I really do hope that he comes back fighting fit. And we'll see where we end up with him. I've said before, right enough, that I believe that maybe a change is good for Liam Donnelly. But we just need to wait and see how things progress with his fitness.
Just looking at that there, it's last appearance from the bench against Ross County, so that was a week after Ibrox. That last season, only one appearance, of course, the opening day of the season against Ross County. So a long road back for Liam, and I suppose getting some minutes under his belt will certainly be beneficial, and you just have to hope that we can get the player that we had back.
A couple of seasons ago, you get quoted as potentially, I think it was just a mad agent rumour that Celtic were looking at him, and he was going through that really good kind of goal scoring spell. So there's obviously some sort of kind of a hope that he's going to progress on. But my concern again is he seems to be just one of these players that's kind of made of chocolate, and he'll never get through a full season without some sort of injury.
I suppose it depends on the extent of the injuries as well. The cruciate injury that he had last season is obviously one that has ruled many players out for a significant period of time. It's just all about getting these players back physically, and also the mental side of the game as well, because you've got to imagine that being ruled out for that length of time during what was a difficult season, during a season where many players found it difficult due to the rules and restrictions in place. There was, of course, no supporters inside the ground. I think for so many of us, it was a really difficult period in our lives. And when you couple that with what is essentially a career-threatening injury, it must have been very, very difficult. So when you come back, are you going to be throwing yourself into challenges, or are you going to be maybe a bit more reserved and a wee bit more cautious? And then to pick up another injury like Liam did back in September, it's just been such a frustrating time. And I think it's been mentioned on here before, but my concern was that there was potential for Liam Donnelly not to return to football because of the kind of reoccurring injuries that he continues to pick up. It must be mentally so challenging and quite frightening as well.
I think that's a good point that you've made, because I think as fans, sometimes don't think about that. We think that if you're on the bench, you're 100% fit to come back on. If you're starting after a long injury, right, you're fit. Let's get back to where you were. Not all fans are like that, but I would say, include myself in that, sometimes that you get frustrated and you sometimes don't think about the kind of mental effect that a long-term injury has had. I suppose it's similar to any occupation. If you're off for a long period of time, you know what it's like. The feeling of dread when you're going back. People can turn around and say, "Aye, but they're a footballer, and that's something that's a privilege." It is, but there's still the nerves, the expectation on your shoulders. The kicking off. Are you the player you're there? Do you feel as if you've lost a bit of a pace? Am I going to get injured again? If I'm injured again, am I going to lose my lifestyle due to? So there's all these factors that as fans, we don't think it, and probably until you've kind of articulated it the way that you did there, probably never really appreciated just what a guy like Liam Donnelly has been through. So I hope that he does come back. The difficult thing is that at the end of the day, football is a results business, and if it's not going to be, then the manager's not going to be sympathetic toward this for long. But he's obviously doing something right if he's brought him on for minutes in a game, because, I mean, I don't even, again, going back to the same old thing, I feel as if I'm a broken record, but I'm not 100% sure what the script is with Mark O'Hara. Slattery must be due to be suspended. You've got Barry Maguire, you've got Dean Cornelius, Sean Goss, who has had an injury record as well. So Liam Donnelly may find himself back in a starting 11 sooner than what we actually think.
I feel like I keep on coming in with wee bits of news, but the Mark O'Hara situation, it looks like he could miss another 10 weeks with a thigh injury. So his reoccurring injury nightmare continues as well. That would take you into what, almost March time. So again, really unfortunate for the player, and just one that we've not been able to keep fit since he signed on with us.
I wasn't aware of that. As I said, I've kind of stopped listening to the press conferences just because, I'll give you an example, when Sondre Solomon went off, they kind of intimated that he would be playing the next game, and he's obviously not even made the bench in the last two games since that. So I've just kind of decided not to. So that's my fault for not looking into the information in relation to the injuries now. But yeah, Mark O'Hara certainly has been stop-start. And I think that's affected him pretty much what we discussed earlier on in a kind of way with Van Veen being stop-start. You can see that there's a player in O'Hara, and he would be probably in your three midfielders when everybody's fully fit. He's a versatile player as well, remembering that he played at centre-half a few games. He can go further forward. He's obviously been hitting free kicks, penalties, dead balls and stuff like that. So he's quite a vital member of the squad when he is fit. So that is going to be a big loss. But if you lose a player like that, then there's got to be players that's going to step up. And we've just discussed Dean Cornelius, Liam Donnelly coming back into it. And again, I've got to say, I think that we're a better footballing team when Sean Goss is playing. With regards to the injury, it's just part of football. We just need to go on with it and pick the best 11 that we can.
Yeah, I'm certainly doing. I've got to wonder whether Stephen Robinson Yeah, we certainly do. And I've got to wonder whether Graham Alexander introduced the likes of Liam Donnelly in the latter stages of the game on Sunday with one eye on the busy run of fixtures coming up. Those start with the visit of St Johnstone to Fir Park on Saturday, the 18th of December. A St Johnstone side struggling, surprisingly, at the wrong end of the table just now. We knew when we looked at the fixtures in December, we were starting with a trip to Easter Road, a trip to Celtic Park. It was going to be tough. It has been tough. We've only taken 1 point from a possible six. But now the fixtures look a bit more favourable with home games against St Johnstone and Livingston, a trip to Ross County, and then we start 2022 with a visit to St Mirren. So these are the games that are what we describe as our bread and butter, really, Pepe. We've got to be looking to take as many points as possible from these four matches. St Johnstone visiting Fir Park in no sort of forum whatsoever. We've got to be ready to take advantage of that and hopefully start this busy run with a victory.
Yep, totally agree with what you said. I mean, every game that you've mentioned there is a winnable game, in my opinion. And we've obviously done this before. We've went in great wee runs, and it would be brilliant if we managed to put a winning streak right through December, which doesn't happen very often. The probably the most tricky game, we've also got two away games, but they're two away games that we've won there at Dingwall quite a bit. We've won at Love Street quite a bit, quite a tricky place to go. Jim Goodwin's getting them playing well, but your two home games, you've got to expect 6 points for them. 3 points for potentially Ross County, and you would take a draw at St Mirren. So that's what makes your season games like this wee run, when you look at it. I always remember Steve Robinson saying he's block of four. I'd be interested to see what he'd be hoping for in this block of four, because certainly it's not beyond the realms of possibility that we get 12 points, but you're really looking anywhere 9-10 points is going to be decent.
Yeah, that's it. I think that the next four games almost dictate where your season goes. You get 8 or 9 points from those games coming up, and suddenly you're looking at a potential push for European places and almost consolidating your place in the top six. It doesn't go so well, and suddenly, after a period where we've been looking up the table, we maybe begin to look over our shoulders again, and there's that danger that you can get dragged back in when the Premiership fixtures resume after the winter break. So, yes, it's a big time, and momentum is so important. The games come every 4 or 5 days, so you've got that chance to build a winning habit and really make these points rack up. So it's going to be exciting. I'm quite looking forward to it, I must say. We'll discuss the Scottish Cup draw as well. It didn't provide a very inspiring tie, but I suppose in a positive regard, we've got a winnable tie, we've got a home tie. It was initially Inverness or Morton. Morton prevailed in a penalty shootout against Inverness last week. So Morton at Fir Park, a familiar opponent. More often than not, we've come out in the right end of a result. We played Morton in the Scottish Cup last year in a quite ridiculous game, to be honest. Nothing happened for 119 minutes. Stephen O'Donnell scores in the last minute of extra time. But still, we managed to find a way to have the game go to penalties, with Fyortov scoring about 60 seconds after we had scored to send it to penalties. But Liam Kelly was the hero on the night, and we did get to the quarterfinals after a fair bit of toil. Pepe, I know that as supporters, we quite often look for the trip that we've not had before, or some of the non-league sides in the draw. You're kind of fancying a trip to somewhere remote or somewhere different. But I suppose if we're thinking about it with a sensible head on, Morton at Fir Park, it's a good draw, and it's one that we should win. And then we can look ahead to progressing the cup further.
Morton seem to be our kind of cup team, don't they? We seem to get them quite regular. Obviously, on the run to A91, which was a dreadful, dreadful game at Fir Park, and probably equally so at Capel in the 91 run. But enough reminiscing about that, and let's hopefully that we're, this is the start of our next cup run. But you, I would take that draw every week, ironically. I mean, if you look at the game, Morton v Inverness, where Morton are victorious, then the next, on the Saturday, obviously that game is midweek, Inverness go out in the league and beat them 6-1. So you really would have expected us to be playing Inverness. So I was kind of quite happy, because Inverness would have been quite a tricky team to come up against. I think Billy Dodds has got them playing well, they're top of the table, riding high, whereas Morton are really fighting for their lives in the championship. You really have to, we need to go out there and have the right attitude. Let's not forget, we've had some horror shows in the cup, with teams like Albion Rovers. We had a horror show against Airdrie. The League Cup this season was terrible, and I think it's really important that the manager puts together a decent cup run. Look at the difference that the cup runs made to Steve Robinson. I mean, we had some great times. I mean, even when you listen to the intro of the podcast and you hear that Louis Moult goal at Ibrox, it's great. I mean, I talked to my wee boy, and he still lives for that moment again. He has beaten a team like Rangers when we're underdogs. That's what it's like to be a Millwall fan. And we really need that for the manager to get the cup run. No performances like we did against Dundee, Airdrie, even against Queen of the South in Annan, we weren't really that impressive. So I think it's really important that we focus on this. Yes, the league is our bread and butter, but it's important financially for the club. It's important for the fans to have something to look forward to. There's nothing worse than it comes into a Saturday and the team that put you out have got a really decent cup tie or a good away day or something like that. It really does sicken you. So I really hope that we get a decent cup run. Obviously, I want us to win it. But we need to start focused and have the right mentality going into this Morton game. No thinking that the game's won before a ball's even booted.
Because we did come a cropper in the Premier Sports Cup against Airdrie, didn't we? In terms of, I think we were massive favourites for that game. It's not one that we want to dwell on too much, but from start to finish, that was a complete and utter disaster. And whether that was taking the competition too lightly, whether it was taking the opposition too lightly, it certainly didn't go our way in the night. So I think that if we're going to take any positives from that Airdrie game 4 or 5 months ago, that should be it, that these teams are capable on their day of springing a surprise. So we've got to be wary of that. But we know that if we're at our best, then if we will win the tie, there's no getting around that. And I fully expect us to do it come the middle of January. I mentioned that we would talk about players coming in and players going. Ross Tierney was someone we discussed on the last podcast very briefly. He's been getting quite a big build-up. Republic of Ireland, under-21 international. He'll be at the club. I think he might be training with the club just now, to be honest. But the transfer's set for the 1st of January. We should see him in a Motherwell jersey very, very soon. A few players rumoured to be on their way out or linked with other clubs. The first one being Ricky Lamy, Pepe, who I think if you had been asked this question 5 or 6 months ago, he'd have been pretty adamant that it wouldn't have been a major loss to the squad should Ricky Lamy decide to move on. Since then, he's certainly proved a lot of the doubters wrong with a number of good performances, and quite often been called upon out of the blue. He's come in and done a really good job. He's been linked with a couple of clubs in League One down south. I would have to imagine that one of them would most likely be Morecambe, who have conceded a lot of goals and, of course, are managed by Stephen Robinson. It's an interesting one, isn't it? Like, you couldn't grudge him a move if it was for more money and a chance to maybe push on in his career. But at the same time, I would be quite disappointed to see him leave at this stage.
Yeah, it's a strange one that, again, you don't know whether it's agents playing games, but certainly the Morecambe link, it's really going to be with any player that Steve Robinson signed, because I think he was well thought in the dressing room, and a lot of the players really took to him. Although I don't think Ricky Lamy played his best football under him at all. I wouldn't be heartbroken if Ricky Lamy went away, because I think, as I've mentioned before, I think there's other players like Ricky Lamy. That's not to say that he's not done well or anything like that at all. If he went, we would be able to sign somebody that would be as good, if not better, than him. Yes, he's used to the kind of setup of Fir Park, but he's just one of the players that will come and go. So I wouldn't be as disappointed as what I would be with some of the other players that are getting linked to going away, which I'm sure we'll go on to in a minute.
Yeah, I agree with you, mate. And I suppose the other player that is going to come up time and time again until we hear otherwise is Tony Watt. And it seems increasingly likely that Tony Watt won't be at Motherwell beyond the end of the season. It seems like contract negotiations have stalled. That's going in newspaper reports. There was a lot of accusations that it was paper talk ahead of the Celtic game. I don't really buy into that, to be perfectly honest with you. I think that the journalists that were reporting it more often than not get the story right when it comes to Motherwell and seem to have a decent relationship with the club. It wouldn't take anybody by surprise if Tony Watt was to move on and try and get one of, potentially what is one of his last paydays in his career. He's enjoying a brilliant run of form. He seems very settled at Motherwell, and that's the thing that we keep on hoping goes for us when it comes to the contract negotiations. But at the same time, and how many players have we given examples of on tonight's episode that have picked up bad injuries and have almost got to the point where you're concerned about their futures? The same could happen to Tony Watt. So he might be looking at that and thinking, I need to take my opportunity when it comes around. I'm sure if these brilliant goals keep on flying in and the great performances continue, there's going to be plenty of potential suitors for Tony Watt.
Well, there definitely will be. Absolutely no doubt. That the easy example for me to say, though, is Declan Gallagher. His career has nosedived from being marking Mitrovic at the game, a hero when Scotland qualified, to barely making the bench with Aberdeen. But at the end of the day, he's sitting warming the bench and making probably 2-3 times his wages and kind of getting his family's futures sorted. So deep down, he's the winner out of it. I think the easy way to equate it is when you're young, like, I always on this talk about my boy and my nephews that go to the games, and they said, "Oh, Dad, why would Tony Watt want to leave when he's doing so well?" An easy way to say it is, if anybody listening to this, or you or I, were offered a salary times 3, times 4, times 5 elsewhere, we would take that in a heartbeat. And I've got absolutely nothing to grudge. Tony Watt has given us, for the game against St Mirren, where we get put out in the cup, I completely changed my mind on that night. He's still got this reputation. I've seen there's some Hibs fans on Twitter saying that they were getting linked with a move for him, but they thought he was an arsehole, basically. And I was really disappointed with that. And I was so close to commenting saying, I actually thought that. But he's actually great to have at the club. He'll be a massive, massive loss. I really can't see him coming and signing a contract now, because I think it's about his family, it's about himself, it's about making some money. That's what's really important. Andy, go and pause it for 2 seconds. Sorry.
Right.
Sorry, mate, my daughter came in. What was I saying there?
He looked to be kind of making the move for his family.
And I can't grudge him that at all. What you really hope is that he doesn't sign for an Aberdeen, the Hibs. Obviously, I don't see him going back to Hearts. You hope he gets a move, if he doesn't stay with us, that is, down south or even abroad again, like a American club or something like that comes in for him. But I don't think any Millwall fan can really grudge him anything. He's gave his absolute all when we'd done our kind of a breakdown of the year at the end of the season. We said if he adds goals to his game, he's really going to be we'll be really struggling to keep a hold of him, and he's done that. And that's where I think, unfortunately, you know, we're going to be a victim. He's going to be a victim of his own success, not for himself, but for us.
Yeah, it seems like the unfortunate reality of the situation, that you'd have to believe that we would have played most of our cards when it comes to try and get him tied down. I think that when you look back to when Tony Watt came in as well, what you expected to get out of him and compare it to what we've got out of him, you've got to be really satisfied with the deal. He's made a massive impact on us. His goals last season, his performances last season were very important. And this season he's kicked on one step further. And you don't become top scorer in the league by accident. He's scoring regularly, he's scoring consistently. And that was something that was levelled at him, that he didn't do that enough. He didn't find the back of the net. There was plenty of times where he was involved in goals. There was plenty of times where he would get himself into good positions, but he wasn't a regular on the score sheet enough. He very rarely scores a brace, or he's not scored a hat-trick for us, but so he gets big goals game in, game out. I did level at him that he didn't score enough goals against Rangers and Celtic. He's not managed to do that yet, but that's a difficult thing in a team that tends to find themselves right up against it from minute one against the Old Firm. So I don't think that's something that will hold them back too much. Just looking at the list of players out of contract as it stands.
See this before we go on to that. Just a couple of questions for you, right? Just when we're talking about this, do you think there's a chance that he'll go away, that Jake Muller would cash in on him in January? And two, where do you think, what kind of club, do you think that Tony Watt would attract? Do you think it will be an Aberdeen or a Hibs, or do you think it will be like a Sunderland or somebody that can pay a bit of money? Where do you see what do you think will happen?
I tend to go with that he'll remain at the club till the end of the season. The ideal solution would be, of course, that he signs a new deal and we could make some money on him and have a kind of sort of gentleman's agreement. But this isn't a David Turnbull type scenario. Tony Watt will be 28 later on this month. So when you're buying Tony Watt, you're not buying potential. You're buying what you've got in the here and now. I think that top end League One, bottom end Championship is his most likely destination. I would be disappointed to see him at an Aberdeen or a Hibs, but I could completely see the rationale behind him going to a club like that. I do wonder whether his time at Hearts, and we'll always talk about the perceived notion that he's got a bad attitude. I still think that even fans of Hearts and St Johnston, they still make quite a big noise about what his attitude was like back then. And I don't know whether that will maybe hinder him going to another Scottish club, or whether it would make a difference in terms of going to Hibs, a rival of Hearts, obviously. I really don't know, but I would imagine that he'll remain at the club till the end of the season. And I would place him at a Sunderland. Seems like a kind of sensible shout of a club that would expect him to make the Championship this year after all the years of absolute hilarity. And I think he would do well. He's got that physical side of his game as well, pretty much nailed down. I think he could cope with the rough and tumble of the English Championship. And to go to a club, if he was to go to Sunderland, the wages compared to what he's getting at Fir Park, without being privy to knowing exactly what he's getting or anything like that, but I'm sure that he would do very well for himself. So, yeah, it's a difficult one to ponder, because we certainly don't want him to go anywhere, but if he was to go, I would prefer it was down south, out the road, where he can't come back to kick us.
I totally agree, because he's really, he's one player that I always look at and think, can I believe how much he's turned my mind round on him, with his effort and work rate. And if he does go, then he'll go with my best wishes, unless he goes to Aberdeen or Hibs or any other Scottish club for that matter.
He'll not go back to Airdrie. That's the one thing we can take with half your bit of confidence. Also on that list of players that are out of contract at the end of the season, so you've got Tony Watt, Liam Donnelly, Mark O'Hara, Liam Grimshaw, Ricky Lamy, Barry Maguire, Robbie Crawford, Nathan McGinley, Jordan Roberts. His loan deal ends, says here, on the 3rd of January. I'm not sure how accurate that is, but his loan deal is due to end very soon. Bevis McGabby, Scott Fox, PJ Morrison, Michelle Parker, his contract ends on the 1st of January, according to transfermarket.co.uk. Justin Amaloser, he's the end of May, as is Dara O'Connor. So a fairly substantial list there to ponder who we get tied up and who you might see move on in the next 2 or 3 weeks as the January transfer window opens. Is there any standouts there, with the exception of what, that you would really like to see tied down straight away?
I think standout is a difficult thing to pick out of that list. I think there's an argument to every single one of them. I think if I look at O'Hara, we've already discussed his injury situation. I think the one that you'll be surprised to hear me say is that I think McGabby would be up there, just because he's been fit the majority of the time. He's improving, and he seems to have kind of got a connection with the place now. Yes, I was harsh in criticism of him. Not as bad as what you were a couple of weeks ago, right enough.
I wasn't actually going to invite you back for tonight.
But I think that he is the one out of that list that you would probably expect to sign, unless somebody else comes in. I thought Roberts, when he came on against Hibs, done well. But again, I'm still undecided by him. I'm a Loser seems to be bit part. He seems to come on and does all right and then gets dropped out of the squad the next week. Robbie Crawford, I wouldn't give him a game for any SPL team, to be honest with you. I think he's decent enough, but for me, definitely not good enough. The likes of PJ Morrison, another young guy that's come through, but certainly, and you need to make a decision if it's going to be Scott Fox or him. But none of that list really makes me concerned about any of the players that are going out. Obviously, we've signed a lot of players on kind of 2 and 3 year deals with Ken Woolrey, Van Veen in 2 year deal, Liam Kelly in a kind of long term contract. So for me, the reason that the squad is so big was as a result of what we've already discussed with COVID and stuff. So I do expect quite a few of them to sign pre contracts and be away by the end of the season. The turnaround won't just be as big. The one that I think will be debatable is Barry Maguire. Barry Maguire has been, for me, I think at times, you know what, he's decent. Then a few weeks down the line, I think, I'm back to not being 100% sure. At first, when he came in, I thought, he's not going to be good enough. He's been through a wee spell, but he's done well. Unfortunate to get the red card, but at a time where I thought his form was really picking up, But the manager obviously sees something in him, and I do fully expect him to sign, even if it's just for another year. I would be interested to find out your thoughts on Barry Maguire. I think the majority of the fans would be the same. I think his fitness is really good. He puts 100% effort in. But I say this often as well, I'd put 100% effort in, but I don't think it would be much good. He's one that's debatable. So you've got loads of different scenarios. You've got Grimshaw, who, for me, he seems to have, I don't know if the manager's maybe starting to see faults in his game, because he seems to have fell out the picture a wee bit again. But he's a decent player to have about the squad. If he's happy playing the kind of bit part player, then I would probably like to see him kind of sign another year deal. Really depends on what where he sees himself, and if he's happy playing that role. I do expect him to sign. I think he's a great guy. He loves the club. He's got a great personality. Footballing wise, would I be devastated if he went? I probably would miss his personality more than his performances at times, if that doesn't sound too harsh. I feel really guilty about saying that, but because I love his character and his passion and stuff, but I don't know if he's maybe better going and trying somewhere with a fresh start. So I've tried to cover the main ones. I know it's a bit machine gun scatter, but it's a difficult one to try and predict.
It's certainly an interesting one. It almost kind of merits a podcast of its own. You asked me what my take was on it. I would say that Mugabe, in terms of sellable assets that we've got, I think that Bevis Mugabe must be right up there now. And for that reason alone, I think that it's someone that we should be looking to tie up pretty quickly. Interesting to hear your opinions on Liam Grimshaw there, because I can remember being almost lambasted for saying towards the end of last season that I wouldn't have been too bothered to see him go. And that is certainly not a personal slight on him. I think that he's played a big role for the team over the last kind of two or three seasons. And he's not anything glamorous. He does the simple things well, but I think he has been exposed at times, and injuries haven't been too kind to him either. I don't know. I think there will come a point where a mutual partner the ways makes sense. That said, I think that he's a good guy to have around the club. He's a good guy to have in the squad. I think that it would be quite easy to strike up a deal with William Grimshaw, and I think that it would also be kind of one of these ones that could be used to get the fans up a wee bit as well, because he is a massive fan favourite. I noticed that at the Dundee United game the other week, where he goes to warm up, and the reception he got was better than any of the other subs, including the likes of Stephen O'Donnell, who's obviously the club captain. So yeah, he's certainly a popular figure, and one that if he was to leave, it would be, I think the fans would have a heavy heart as he departed, put it that way. The rest, Barry Maguire, you talked about, and I agree with most of what you said on him. We also have that kind of loyalty to Barry Maguire because he's come through the youth setup. I think at times we've maybe hoped that he would kick on more than he has. There's been a few times where I'm sure he's been pretty close to leaving the club, and then he's got a wee opportunity and done quite well. And he'll tend to play three or four games in a row and then drop out the side. But he's on one of them just now. He's been a consistent performer. He seems to have worked in his upper body strength and his fitness levels to the point where he is a wee bit more mobile, maybe trying to mould him into a sort of replacement for Alan Campbell, which would be an incredible ask for anybody. But I think that he's a very good squad player. There is times where he can frustrate me quite a bit, but yes, another one that I would like to see signed up fairly quickly. And then after that, like I said, people will
scoff at this because it really seems to divide the fans. In fact, he doesn't seem to divide the fans. He seems to be quite... he seems to be one that the fans seem to agree on. Nathan McGinley has not been up to the level, but I think this season he's done very well. He's had a poor game at Tannadice, but that aside, I think more often than not, Nathan McGinley turns up for Motherwell. He doesn't do anything glamorous, kind of like Maguire and Grimshaw, but I think that he's a player that has been a big one for Motherwell so far this season, and I would like to see him tied down to at least another year, because I really don't believe that we've got many better options at full-back than McGinley.
Oofed. This is where we're going to disagree. No, for me, McGinley, I just don't see what you're seeing at all. I think against Hibs, I thought every attack that they had in the first half was coming down that left-hand side. It was like what we had discussed. I said, if I was a manager, I would attack Motherwell's left-hand side. And the ball comes across, all right, there's not much he could have done about that. And he actually had a better second half. But I just think he's been... I just don't think he's good enough for the level that he's expected to play.
That's a performance that ended up a place in the team of the week.
I said that he'd done all right in the second half. I didn't agree that he should have been in the team of the week. But who am I to argue with that? Again, he puts the effort in, but I just don't think that he's a decent left back. I really don't. I think we could get far better. He's the one that I forgot to actually mention when you went through the list there. For me, definitely no. Thank him for his service and let's go and try and get somebody else. I think if you asked the majority of Motherwell support, if we had a full strength back four, and I don't think Jake Carroll has filled himself with glory for you come back to the team, but I prefer him to left back than McGinley. But again, it's like the Gail Bigramana scenario where Steve Robinson said that a player's always better when he's not playing. And when a player is playing, he's easily criticised. And that might be the situation. But I definitely think we could go out there and that would be Graham Alexander's kind of one of his first signings should be a kind of a decent left back. We've never had a left back for Stevie Hamill. Let's be honest. I really don't want to have another season relying on Nathan McGinley as being a left back. And just a quick point on Barry Maguire. When you go back to when we done the podcast with Mark Fitzpatrick a few years back and we were discussing about the time where he was offered a kind of year's contract at Motherwell, but he was offered 2 or 3 year deal at Ross County, and he actually says, I wish I'd stayed at Motherwell because I was settled, I was with my family, it was what I knew if I was a kid and stuff like that. And yeah, I might not have been playing every week, but I think I would have ended up signing and being a long-term player there. I think that'll come into Barry Maguire's mind. And I hope it does. I hope that he stays. And even if he is a bit part player. But if you go to look at guys like kind of Stuart Carswell and stuff like that, who done well for a while and then fell down the leagues. Whereas I think if Barry Maguire signs another year, he's going to have a relatively decent career. And I'd be quite happy with that. So there's my closing gambit. Definitely a no for me for Nathan McGinley.
The thing with Maguire, you can use Carswell as an example and you've got every right to, but the guys that Maguire came through with, the likes of Turnbull, Hasty maybe not been the best example there, but Campbell, Hasty, Turnbull, James Scott, they were on to win big moves, albeit I know that James Scott's hasn't particularly worked out. He's out on loan just now at Hibs. Hasty's been pretty much a disaster, but he's still is picking up a tidy sum of money from Rangers. Well, sitting on the bench at Partick Thistle on loan, but he might believe that it's now his turn to try and get a move. Now, I'm sure you'll agree that he's not really done enough to win that big move. He's not demonstrated enough attributes that the likes of a Campbell or a Turnbull did. Even Hasty, when he burst onto the scene, he made a huge impact on the team. Barry Maguire, while he's not that sort of player, I don't think that he's on that level either, to be perfectly honest with you. But agents being agents, and maybe filling players' heads with nonsense, would Barry Maguire may believe that there is something out there for him at a higher level? You never know.
I don't see that at all either, to be honest. I think at this current time, Barry Maguire is probably punching above his weight a wee bit, being the Mullerwell starting lineup and circumstances have found him there. I think
it's hard though because the thing is, I would go with that, but at the same time, time and time again, he returns to the team, so he must be doing something right in that regard. That he's a player that's seen as a go-to.
He seems to he's fit. He really is. You can see his fitness levels. I don't remember him having too many injuries. So time and time again, they've come back because the circumstances have dictated that he's fit and he's there. I mean, you're saying, where do you see a move up for him? What kind of level? I don't see him going anywhere. I don't see him getting into... I mean, we're obviously talking monetary. We're talking about kind of Tony Watt going to a kind of League One side. I mean, I don't see him going anywhere near the same level as what Tony Watt. It would need to be a move abroad. I don't see him playing with the likes of the big spenders in the league. If you look at Aberdeen, Hearts, Hibs, he's not going to get in any of the teams. Dundee United spend money. Could I see him going there? Possibly. But that would just be a monetary move. It wouldn't be any better than playing with Motherwell. Then you're going down to the likes of St Mirren, Ross Counties. It's all at the same level. So I don't really see where he's going to go. I really don't. A big move. I mean, Alan Campbell get the move to Luton, and a few Motherwell fans were quite disappointed with that. Barry Maguire, when he cut it at Luton in English Championship. So I think that his level, he's maybe slightly above his level here. I think he would be he's a decent player in a Championship. And sometimes that's just players, he's playing at his full capacity with Motherwell. And if his feet are on the ground and he's realistic, he wants to move on. But maybe he knows within himself that this is his kind of benchmark and he's happy where he's at. I really can't see him. He can't have him in the same conversation. Campbell, even Hasty to an extent, who was scoring goals and spectacular goals for fun. I just don't see where the next move would be other than him becoming a journeyman and moving from club to club to club and ending up playing with teams like Dunfermline, and then before you know it, he's at Dumbarton and very much falling into Dom Thomas, Stuart Carswell, Ross Forbes quite. If you look at the likes of Ross Forbes, who really set the scene in fire, he's just a journeyman that's played at Morton, Dumbarton, can't even remember where else.
No, it's fair, but I was just merely playing devil's advocate there to say that I don't know. I've not had many experiences of Barry bar a very brief podcast that we did for the club a couple of years back, but I'm sure that at that time his ambition was to break into the team. He's not managed to do that on a consistent basis for whatever reason, but this season he has certainly racked up more appearances than he has in previous seasons, and who knows what the thoughts are in the inside of our park about him. And the sensible option might be just to continue as we are, and extend the deal by another year, and hopefully he can kind of reach the level that is required. I don't know if he's a million miles off it, to be honest. It's a very tricky one. But I think he's under the category of someone that shouldn't be too difficult to deal with should we want him to remain at the club.
I think if you offered Barry Maguire a similar contract to what he's on the now, he would take the hand off you for it.
We'll soon see, and it's something that we can kind of revisit and discuss how wrong we both were a couple of months down the line. But we'll finish up by discussing the Christmas toy drive, which was the donation was made last night. We're recording on Tuesday. Pepe, you were instrumental in getting it all over the line. Unfortunately, and you possibly can hear from my voice and the fact that I'm out of breath any time I try to string together a longish sentence, that I've fallen foul of COVID recently. So I wasn't unfortunately been able to be part of it last night. But yourself and some of the representatives from Wish You Wickham, a few of the boys from various age groups were on hand to make the donation. And I believe it was quite an emotional experience, really.
I didn't really expect it to be like that, to be honest, but it was the way that the staff were so surprised. I think they knew that the timescales that we worked in, the difficulties with yourself being unwell, and everything seemed to go against us. But obviously, got a great donations from Wish You Wickham, but a brilliant donation for Jim at the Mullerow Athletics. A great donation. I mean, my car was full of the brim, but actually, when you've got three kids myself and you hear every day they're adding stuff to the list, and just speaking to the staff there, and they were saying that just the kid waking up to one present. Now, we know it's another debate altogether that Christmas isn't about the presents, but for kids it is. To contribute to that and to maybe make a wee kid's day with something that my kids would look at as being just another thing. It was quite a humbling experience, to be honest, and something that I'll definitely continue to be involved in. My cousin, my wife's cousin had a big air hockey table. It was a pool table and stuff like that, and they were absolutely delighted with it. So it's a humbling thing to see that you're going to make that wee bit, even if it's just a wee bit of difference. Let's be honest, we've only kind of scratched the surface, but at the end of the day, it's something that will live with me. And to be honest with you, what I took out for it was the staff took the time to speak to the kids that were there, the boys for the various age groups of Wish You Wickham. And they were taken aback. They didn't realise that they didn't put a value on everything that they got and just took it for granted. And I think they actually earned for it. So it was a really good kind of humbling experience.
Yep, absolutely. And we are really, really grateful for everyone that contributed to this year's toy drive. As Pepe mentioned there, it wasn't easy at times. We came up against a few logistical challenges, and we didn't have the usual collection at Fir Park either, which certainly doesn't help in terms of promoting the event. But people went over and above for us yet again to make it a success. We put out a wee bit on the website earlier on. There's no pleasure in the fact that we've got to do these things to try and make a difference to young people's Christmases. That hopefully there's a day in the not too distant future where these initiatives don't have to take place. That would be the absolutely ideal scenario. But until then, we can all do our wee bit. And as I say, we're proud to have done that. In addition to that, there was also a fundraising page for Tiny Changes Charity, which is a mental health charity supporting young people in Scotland. That's sitting at £100 as well just now. So yeah, it's been a very worthwhile couple of weeks. It means a lot when these things come off and are successful. You do get a wee bit of pride in yourselves, but I think more than that, the people that get in contact with us time and time again for these projects that I've never spoken to in the past, but they want to make a donation, they want to support it in any way possible. That's an incredible feeling, and one that we definitely don't take for granted. So thank you to everyone that got in touch and made some toy donations. For those who have put some money in the Tiny Changes Fund as well, it will all go to great places, and we really do appreciate it. Mate, you can possibly hear I've got absolutely no voice left, so we'll call it a night at that. But thank you very much for tonight.
Thanks again, Andy. At least we didn't clash this week as much as we did the week before.
No, it was more you throwing me under the bus, but we'll move on. It's okay. You've been listening to the MFC podcast. We'll be back at the start of next week to preview the games over Christmas time. Until then, thank you. Goodbye.
From what's done, what a faff.